Welcome to Living Villa Capelli, where we learn life is so much sweeter when you add a little Italian to it. And now your hosts, Paul Capelli and Stephen Crutchfield.
Hey everybody, it's Stephen. Welcome to Living Villa Capelli. It's just Stephen right now. I wanted to give you guys a little intro here because this is going to be a different kind of podcast. This time we had some guests with us, John and Angela Cahill from Massachusetts. They are returning guests, actually. They were here about 3 years ago. Then they came back this summer, and we went and explored some new areas with them. So one of these nights when we came back from the Gargano, I put my little portable mic in the middle of the kitchen table, and we sat around and talked about our day. So I hope you guys enjoy it. Hope you get a little bit out of it. You get a little bit of idea of what it's like to visit the area and how much fun we can have here. I will say excuse the sound just a little bit. Again, the mic was in the table, especially my voice, because I was away from the mic. It was a little bit distant, but I think overall it came out pretty decent considering it was in an ancient stone room in the kitchen, so the acoustics were not the best, but I think it came out okay. To start out the show, too, I also want to give a little bit of shout-out to all of our fans. We really, really appreciate everybody leaving us a rating and review on iTunes. That does help us. Helps us spread the word and share the wonderfulness of Italy, which, you know, that's kind of what we're all about. We like spreading this Italian lifestyle around. So I'll give a few shout-outs to some people here. Let me get on the computer. Let's see. Sue, I'm going to butcher these names, so excuse me. But Sue Monhot, thank you so much. Then we have DJ Byron. Then we have E2L19, thank you so much. Helen Lepore. Oh, hey, Helen. Hey, Helen's back from my days at Gotham. Thank you so much for the review. I appreciate it. And here, one last one, Youper Smith. I'll read Youper's review. I went to visit Villa Capelli. Italians know how to live, eat, and work in the right order. I think that pretty much sums up our show and our lifestyle and kind of what we're trying to spread here, the little bit of how Italians do know how to live, and we can all kind of learn from that. One other thing I just want to note, that somebody had some really good feedback we had that maybe we should offer a little bit more, what do you say, call to actions for you guys, maybe something you can actually take away and go do. So at the end of the show, I'll tease you now, but I'm going to give you the recipe for our world famous limoncello and the lemon martini that Angela is drinking during the show. So I will give you those two recipes, actually both very simple, but they make amazing drinks, and hopefully you can also learn a little bit just listening to this podcast. Again, it's about our trip through Gargano, which is the spur of the boot, and kind of the adventures we had, and you can get an idea of like what kind of sights you'll see there. It really is an amazing, amazing trip, and luckily and surprisingly for us, it was only an hour and a half away from the villa, so we're very excited to find a new place that's really amazing. And on that note, we'll get right into the interview. You'll hear a little bit of the intro music I played for them to get them in the mood, and then we kind of just jump right into it. I hope you enjoy. Thanks. Bye.
Welcome to Living Villa Capelli, where we learn life is so much sweeter when you add a little Italian to it. And now your hosts, Paul Capelli and Stephen Crutchfield.
It's looking
You like that intro, right?
Cool.
That's cool.
Cool.
Oh, so welcome to John Roca Pelli. We're doing a little bit of a different episode today. We are recording some of our guests here. I'm Stephen Crutchfield.
And I'm Paul Capelli.
And we are here with Angela and John, two of our former guests who have returned. And we're here, and we'll see how this goes. I have the mic in the middle of the table, so hopefully the sound is going to be good, and we're going to just talk and describe our day today and our trip with them last time and all that good stuff.
While we drink.
Yes, while we drink.
Yeah, we drink. Always.
Angela has a limoncello, which has our homemade limoncello, vodka, and lemon juice. What do you have?
Delicious.
Bourbon on the rocks.
What kind of bourbon?
That's Buffalo Trace bourbon.
And if you want that, you have to bring it with you.
You can't buy it in Italy.
If you want to sponsor the Villa Capelli podcast, whatever your name is, I can do it right.
And I'm drinking a Manhattan.
I know, very different for the podcast. Usually he has his martini.
I had my first Manhattan, I think, when I was probably 12 years old, maybe 10, when all the people in Dorchester, now that our friends from Boston are here, all the people in the neighborhood in Dorchester, after Mass, they would come to our house, and we would break out a, I think, gallon or a half gallon of pre-mixed Manhattans, and I tasted my first Manhattan.
And I'm on my first of 5 martinis today, because we drove through the mountains today. And I wouldn't say drive, we flew through the mountains.
Thank you, Paul Capelli.
Yeah. The mountains of what, though? The mountains of... they're not really mountains.
What do you call it?
It's the Gargano.
It's the spur. Mean anything?
No, I don't think so. It's the spur on the heel of the boot in Puglia.
Literally, it's 180 degree turns when you're going up this mountain.
Oh, the hairpin.
Yes. Switchbacks, as they call it.
Switchbacks. That's a good one.
Now, how far is that from here?
I don't know.
The Gargano?
That was only an hour and a half.
It was an hour and a half to get there, which we were surprised, because we thought it was going to take us 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm.
It was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
The castle.
The pictures can't even describe it.
Yes.
It's a must-see.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, the best part about that is when you get in the castle, you get to look down on the world. You can.
Yeah.
If you... I can understand what those guys...
John, by the way, is crazy about castles. It's like he doesn't care about anything else. He'll only talk about castles.
About churches, too.
We've decided on this trip that we think we're going to do a castle tour. We're going to offer a castle tour.
People will love it.
Yeah.
No, even if you're not into history, you'd love that.
No.
It's just impressive.
Churches, even if you're not religious.
Yeah.
Well,
the
first time we went to... The one that we spent the most time at today on the Gargano was Monte Sant'Angelo. I believe somewhere in the year 300 or something like that. We have to look it up what the exact day was. The Archangel Michael appeared on this mountaintop in the Gargano. And since then, it's still venerated as one of the holiest shrines in all of Christianity. The popes go there to visit, and the church was built in the 5th century, so around the year 400. But the base church is a grotto underground where they still celebrate Mass. As a matter of fact, they were celebrating Mass today. Of course... John thought it was Latin, but it was Italian. Same thing. Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
It was, even arriving to town, we were kind of...
Wait. You know, with the Latin, it's the same thing as when I was a kid and everything in the Mass was Latin. Mm-hmm. They were singing it.
John's 125 years old.
They were singing in that... they were singing that music. It was in... I still say it's Latin.
Okay, maybe it was.
I heard the singing,
and it was. I'm not sure if the singing might have been in Latin, but the Mass was in Italian.
Yeah,
it might.
But I don't think there was any singing. I think John and Angela had like a religious experience, and
the people were singing.
One of the cool things about the church or the sanctuary of the Archangel Michael there is. There's graffiti on the walls, but graffiti from the 1100s. And the coolest ones, we saw one when we first walked in, and we couldn't figure out why it was there. It's an outline of a hand, like etched into the stone on one of the pillars to the entrance of the church. Then we went downstairs because you start walking down all these stairs as you go deeper and deeper.
Stories.
Yeah.
Oh, more than that.
More than that.
It's like 4 stories, 5 stories down.
Down
into
wasn't
the rock.
So bad. Up was high.
Yeah.
Going down.
And of course, as soon as you walk in, it feels like the whole place is air conditioned. It'd feel like you were in a mall in Florida.
Yeah.
So I asked one of the people who worked there, what was the deal? Because there were more hand engravings downstairs. They were like all over the place. and some of them multiple hands all over. And I said, well, what's with these hands? You know, who did this sort of graffiti etched into the stone? And he said it was the Crusaders would go to this sanctuary of the Archangel Michael before heading off to the Holy Land to fight the infidels at that time, I guess. And they would put their hands on the stones of the sanctuary and sort of trace it out and then chisel it away so that the hand imprint would remain there. And they were asking the Archangel to guide their hand in battle.
That was pretty cool.
It was very cool. I mean, and the sanctuary itself was blow away. It's carved out of the rock, and or what it was, a cave. I don't know if it's carved or what.
I think it's a natural cave.
It looks like a natural cave.
And just beautiful, beautifully done. The altar was just gorgeous. It was just.
And you're not supposed to take pictures, but we have fabulous
but we
pictures.
Did.
Yes, also, we're all sneaking them like at our waist, like spies. Like he's not looking. Right. Take a picture.
We're bad Americans, but we're not like the bad Americans who keep breaking statues in Rome.
But that's he was right. Only speaking in Italian. And I didn't know what he was saying.
Exactly.
and then from the tomb, we walk over to...
The sanctuary.
So we tried to get into the crypts, but they were unfortunately...
Closed at 3 o'clock, like everything else. And then you had to have a group of at least 5 people and...
Call your mother and right. Get a note.
From the doctor.
The coolest part that I think Angela and I fell in love with was there are these paintings in this one little hallway that are basically all...
Devotions.
Yeah, devotions. The what are they called? Ex voto in Latin, which is the things that people would leave behind after they thought that a miracle had happened to them because of the Archangel Michael.
I mean, it was so cool. I mean, you just watched all these, and actually through history, like the older ones, like a car, like somebody falling off a horse and cart. And they like, or the baby being caught under the horse of the horse and cart, and like they
how about
survive.
The construction worker, the real bell.
Yeah,
I can identify with him.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, the ladder falling over.
Yeah. And then you saw the railway being built, and then you saw like World War II, some
battle
II
scenes. You got like, yes.
It was patient so on an cool. Operating table.
Yes. A rifle that had misfired and blew up in the guy's face.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll see these ex voto. Pieces in most churches in Italy and around the world, Catholic churches, they're usually made of silver, and they'll be like in the shape of a leg for someone who had their leg saved by a saint, or a heart just as a devotion piece. All these, you know, like either body parts or typical Catholic symbolism. But this is the only place where I saw where they had a whole gallery of drawings made by people who had been somehow saved or spared from catastrophe.
I mean, the colors were cool. I mean,
they were beautiful. You could tell the story.
Yeah, it was really
the story
cool.
Was there, and there really were no words.
Yeah, a guy falling off a ladder. I mean, it was weird thing.
You see this? You know what the funny thing? You see the cement falling out of it.
Yeah.
You know, as he's going over the edge, and the other construction guy was on the ladder. And it was just, you know, it's just
and
stuff
all,
that everyday
stuff.
It's just really like, cool. You almost think it's not no great works of art, but it's they
it
tell a
so
story.
Cool.
It's so cool, you know.
And I continue with my confessional obsession all through Italy of the different confessionals that I took pictures of. And the ones at this sanctuary were the most private because they were actually doors enclosed. People went in, the light clicked on.
They're kind of like the old telephone booths.
Telephone booths.
See, I always thought that's what all of them were.
No, the old world were the ones with the curtains.
She took a picture. There was like where you'd kneel down to talk to the priest.
Outside
the box.
And I saw that one. That was next to the door, right?
Yeah, you see that one.
Literally right next to the door.
Yeah.
So as you walk in the church, you could hear somebody giving their confession.
And the guy would be kneeling on a padded
kneeler.
Yeah.
Next church didn't have one of those. That was when they really wanted
these
to suffer.
These were really fancy. Fancy schmancy.
Nice stuff, though.
These remind me also of... What was the movie, was it about Edward R. Murrow, where, you know, they have like microphones on and they're in their own little soundproof booth.
Yeah.
Which is totally out of character with the rest of the church, but but they were very private.
But you see, that one today, they had different booths, or whatever you want to call them, different languages.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah. Like they have it at
it's
the back.
Big, confession is a big business in Italy.
Big business. It's a zero business in the States now.
I bought.
Nobody goes to confession. Do they still have First Holy Confession?
They do, but they just the priest just talks to the kids.
Oh, really?
It's not scary like when we were kids.
Oh.
Like they go up to the priest, he just sits there, and they go up and they chat and they have a conversation. They don't go in a confessional.
They don't talk about jerking off and stuff like that.
No.
I tell you, but those are the
things. Wrong.
But you know, where else do we see that? We've seen that. The Vatican. That's another place.
In different languages.
Different languages.
Oh,
Spanish,
cool.
Italian, English. Yeah.
The only thing disappointing about the castle and some of the things in the actual sanctuary was everything was in Italian.
Okay.
So a lot of the other places we had gone to, they have the English and the Italian, and this did not.
Yeah, it
did. So some things you weren't quite sure what happened, so you have to go back and read up on it, I guess, online.
Yeah.
And the castle was beautifully done.
Yeah, the
castle was
done.
Spectacular.
It was, 1491, I think, like the latest parts of it, the Anjou.
It was started in 300.
In 300?
387, I think.
Wow.
386, 387 was the first part, and then it always gets expanded.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think I read it was the 300 something, 80.
But it was one of those castles that you could actually walk. First of all, it was pretty much intact, and you could walk through all the insides of it.
Yeah.
Parts of it were pretty scary because you had to almost, crawl through. Stephen, I don't know how you got through.
I barely got through. I mean, that was the part for me. I was like, this is a real castle, because basically it was taking you through to every arrow slit station.
Mm-hmm.
So you could kind of feel like...
All the defenses.
All the defenses. Yeah. So the little boy's probably running behind, giving them more arrows behind them. It was just... It was really kind of cool.
I think Stephen thinks Indians were in there.
And I was behind John, and he, in his dreams, was ducking when he actually had 3 feet above him.
But you see how they laid that out, though? You had... When you first got your ticket to go in, you went to number one, then you went to number two.
Very organized.
They laid it out organized.
Yeah.
And that's made, that made
it. As far as the castles go in Italy, it was very...
Yeah.
It was one of the best laid out castles.
Yeah. And they even had cannons.
Yes. What was the one the other day?
Which one that we went into?
Yeah.
In Lucera.
The big one.
Yeah, the big one in Lucera. The Lucera castle is mind-blowing how big it is. Unfortunately, there's nothing left to it except for the exterior walls, which are mammoth.
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably the size of 4 football fields by 5 football fields.
Yeah. So because I only saw the pictures and I wasn't there. But so there's nothing they can excavate.
There's almost like the drawbridge when you come in.
Yeah.
They actually turned the door sideways, so when you faced the castle, you didn't know where the real entrance was. But when you got in there, the whole left side they dug out. But probably workshops and stores.
So much.
Because what these guys look like from the pictures is they're standing in the middle of a beautiful field, and they're surrounded by tall walls, which... Perspective-wise, it's hard to experience how
it was so massive, but it's sad that no one kept up with that because it's such a part of history.
But that's the problem in Italy in general is that there's so much stuff in Italy that can be excavated that they can't keep up with it, number one. And number two, they're always complaining they don't have money to do it. And then once you excavate it and you bring it to light... How do you maintain it
and make sure that castle there?
There's such history.
There's one way in, one way out, And
but what we saw today was if you do maintain, you do put the money into it, the sanctuary and the castle, people will come.
Oh, it was one of the more touristy places, but the good thing was it didn't feel,
it was a good
they
touristy.
Weren't selling yeah. shit. You it know, they yeah. were selling good stuff. I mean, you know,
there was some
tchotchke stuff, but it
yeah,
wasn't like
not
you didn't
cheap.
Feel like you were in Pisa.
Hey, wait a minute. Hey, wait a minute. I'm from Pisa. No, you didn't feel like you were in Alberto Bello.
Yes, yes. It was tastefully done.
Very tastefully done.
That's a disappointment. I didn't see, you know.
And we also had a great lunch there.
Oh, fabulous
what was
lunch.
The place? Oh, Il Medioevo.
Yes.
It's in the Michelin guides.
So that's what we decided. I mean, Paul asked the local, and the local said, let's go to that place. And we were like, okay, we'll go to that place. And it was really, really good.
Yep. You told him to bring us small quantities of things, and we got large quantities of
things. Yeah. The appetizers alone were a meal.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know
but
what was
delicious.
Good about the guy? He could speak a little English too and explain a little mm-hmm. bit.
Yeah.
So if you weren't there, right. someone could get.
And we tried an after dinner liqueur that I had never heard of before, but I guess it's something very traditional in
that area. Yeah.
On the Gargano, I think they call it Limolivo.
Yes.
Limolivo, which is made from olive leaves that are macerated in grain alcohol, the rind of two oranges and the rind of one lemon, and then caramelized sugar.
Yeah,
it is so damn good.
It was really good.
We'll definitely make that next time. And if you come to the villa, you're going to have Limolivo.
Especially now because we just pruned the olive trees, so we're going to collect all the branches before they get burned. And
well, not the branches, the leaves.
The leaves.
You need to.
And I'm going to change the name of it because I don't like Limolivo.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Sounds like palm olive.
Yeah. We all got to taste a 12-year-old brandy.
A pomegranate brandy.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because he had the same problem we've had with the pomegranates where it doesn't taste like pomegranate.
Yeah, it's because pomegranate doesn't really have any taste if you think about it.
No.
I mean, pomegranate juice does, but it's probably because they add so much sugar to it. But pomegranates themselves, I mean, they're tart and stuff like that, but you can't really put your finger on, that's like, you know, describe the taste of a pomegranate.
Peaches, cranberries, I tried it on, you don't get it.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. The only thing that works
this was good. It just wasn't, it was aged 12 years. He had it in the bottle.
It's still clear.
But if you're going to go to the Gargano, first of all, it is spectacular. It's one of the few places that we've been to where there are, like, it's a huge forest in the middle of it. They drive through with mammoth trees. I mean the trees are hundreds.
Oh, what was that forest we drove through?
It's called the Foresta Umbra, U-M-B-R-A.
And I thought it was Forestman Shade, right, because it was so dark.
Unbelievable.
It's that, like, they talk, you know, like... triple canopy in Vietnam.
Yeah,
that's figure. That's like two.
Yeah,
that's
how
still dark in there. You can see how dark you are in the woods.
I mean, it was
no light gets through. That's why I think those trees, they grow so high because they're reaching for the sun. They are just stretching.
Unbelievable! You can't even describe.
But they are straight. How straight they are.
And if you're gonna go, make sure that you don't get tired of driving back and forth,
I mean,
on hairpin turns, up and down hills.
No exaggeration. It was probably 1,000 turns today.
You know what you need more in that place? You need places to pull over because of the views, the sights, and just because it. No matter where you went around there, it's like Paul's driving. And we're looking. See, look at that.
So much to see.
My shoulder right now, though, is in pain and sore because I was grabbing the "oh crap" handle in the car. That's what we call it. I guess what else you call that? The little handle on top of the door.
Yeah.
And then when I got really tired, I grabbed the handle of the actual handle of the door because Paul does not.
Because Steven's a pussy when it comes to me driving.
But he's an awesome driver. He really is.
No, Paul is a very awesome driver.
Paul is. But we worry about the other drivers.
Right.
That's what we worry about.
We also,
like that big truck that was coming at us.
Right. That was it.
And the bus.
The bus.
Shooting at us.
No. But that's the road. That's the road, the way it's designed and everything else. But
the other cool thing about the Gargano and getting there was... the fauna that we saw. Mm-hmm. So we left the villa and took the road north to Margherita di Savoia, which are the oldest and I believe largest sea salt beds in all of Europe, as a matter of fact. But they are ancient. They go back to Roman times. But what's cool about the sea salt flats, or the beds, whatever you want to call them, is there's, say, we saw probably 100 flamingos, yeah. Pink flamingos. They're not bright pink like the plastic ones you see on people's front lawns.
That are made in Leominster, my hometown.
Leominster, what state is that? Like, we can't tell from your accent.
Massachusetts.
And we saw a small deer. Yes. On the Gargano.
And we saw goats.
Goats
coming up there. We had to wait for the goats to fit, right?
Good cows with huge bells around their necks.
The salt flats themselves are almost worth the drive. They just to see, like.
They just go on forever.
Yeah, I had no idea how big they were. Yeah.
And I wanted to take a picture of the pile of salt, but Paul said it was ugly. But he did go out of his way to go back that way.
So I'll post a picture on the sunset. Yes, we'll have a picture of the salt flats in the show notes.
And the
what about onions?
Flamingos. The flamingos are way the
deep. Oh, the onions.
Yeah, everyone forgets the onions. How can you drive into
the onions? You could smell the onions as they were picking them this morning.
This is onion harvest season. So the town that most of these beautiful white flat onions that we make in the oven, which are really delicious, you cut them in half horizontally, you put them in the oven on a cookie sheet.
God, they're so good.
You put olive oil on them and
salt, pepper, and breadcrumbs. We don't use breadcrumbs now, we use chickpea flour.
Yeah, because Stephen's on his special diet.
Right. Chickpea flour is fabulous. I'm a convert now.
So this town where all these onions come from, and you know, like acres and acres and fields of onion, is Zapponeta.
Yeah, and they're harvesting them, right?
Yeah.
The weird thing to me, the cool thing about it was very interesting. Every parcel of farmland, it seemed like, because there were fences up, they separated all these, and they were literally one onion patch next to the other onion patch, but a fence separating them. Maybe 20 meters by, well, how long is 50 meters?
No, they were 20 meters wide.
Not even 15 feet by 100.
Yeah. When those it was a really interesting, like, just strips, and it was almost like you think the family, somewhere along the way, somebody divided all this land up between the different families.
And all the land is sort of between the salt beds, which are, believe it or not, inland from the sea.
Yeah.
So if you're driving north, the salt beds would be on your left. Then it's all these onion fields, and then just east of those are sand dunes, and then the Adriatic.
The ocean, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not the ocean, the sea.
It's not an ocean.
Seriously, the views from up top too. For you, like, you're going up. I mean, we felt like we were much higher than we were.
I thought that was much higher.
853 meters. But I thought we were higher than that.
Yeah, it seemed like much higher.
But that was Monte Sant'Angelo. See. I don't know right, if any of the ones, other ones were higher.
When you look, that's about the top of that whole area in there. You look around.
Yeah.
But it looked like you're saying thousands of feet in the air, because it drops right off to away from the castle down. I think that gives you that.
See, if you notice, John thinks that we only went to visit a castle.
We did see a church.
And the town, which is very cute. I mean, the whole town itself. We fell in love with the town. Actually, we were making fun of the town as we were going up the hill. We're like, what are with those weird houses? Like, it's all these modern houses, and they look like they're about to fall off the cliff. We're like making fun of them. And then even as we were pulling through the town, we're like, what is with this town? It's like, it's a modern town of, like, it seems huge, but it's on the top of this freaking mountain.
I want to know how that stuff got up there.
Yeah, it's like crazy. It's on
we
the
did
top
follow
of
a truck up there.
Yeah, yes. You know, was a great place. Remember where they had that painting of the woman looking out the door. The witch thing.
Yeah.
They had that little outlook that was, there. And it was like
that was that
looking
was,
down to the sea. Yeah. How high was that?
That was a cute little sort of more bohemian town called Peskici.
That was what? A couple hundred feet to the water?
A couple hundred. What, are you kidding me?
More?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What about the...
We were high up.
What are you talking about?
Remember the...
What are you guys crazy? It was at least 700 feet. Maybe 1,000.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, okay. Yeah. All right. So, you know, okay, I've only had one drink. Let me have one.
Exactly.
But there's a... But you see the balcony?
John thinks it takes a half hour to get anywhere.
Yeah.
But you 60 miles, off. Half hour. Off. Half hour.
Dave, no, you know 20 why? Minutes.
Right. 20 minutes.
But you
20 minutes.
Did you see the balcony right there?
Yeah.
It's big enough for two chairs, maybe a little table, and it's straight down to the water. That's a drop, right? That, I mean, think about having these cocktails on that one. Yeah, huh? That was cool.
That's why Italians don't drink as much as we do.
Yeah, that you know, you fall off that one.
Yeah, so we went to Monte Sant'Angelo, drove through the Foresta Umbra, which I don't think has anything to do with Umbria.
No.
Just Umbra.
I totally, because to me it sounds, again, my bad pun. It sounds, I thought it sounded like shade, but
it doesn't.
It's not.
Yeah. Or maybe it doesn't.
What's it?
Maybe in Latin or something. Then we went to Peschici, which took an hour and a half from Monte Sant'Angelo on winding roads.
Which one was that?
It took a
Peschici?
The
witch
was. Which witch was.
Yeah, had, okay, yeah. Right.
And then from there we drove to Vieste.
Which we didn't really, we drove.
We drove, yeah, because but we were tired and it looked like a huge city. Although what looked cool on top of the hill at Vieste?
It looked nice.
What looked cool up there?
Castle.
The castle.
The castle.
Hey, guys. Hope you enjoyed that. It was a lot of fun to do. So I hope you enjoyed listening to as much as fun we had doing it. We're going to have a second part to this. That's why it kind of just dropped out. I'm going to continue this on another episode, either immediately following this one, or we're going to skip one episode and then do another two-parter to this. That one's going to be a lot about Angela and John's first trip here and kind of the heritage tour that we did with them, finding their family documents and the fun we had doing that, as well as our trip down south when they were here this next time. So I did promise you a recipe for our limoncello, and it's very, very simple. You're going to start with a liter of alcohol. So most, some recipes will call for vodka. We don't recommend the vodka, but usually you're using grain alcohol for this. So if you can't find grain alcohol where you are, I know some states, and New York, I believe, does not sell grain alcohol, so you have to go over to New Jersey to get it. But we recommend a liter of grain alcohol, and you take the peel of either 10 to 12 lemons, and make sure the lemons don't have a lot of waxy stuff on them. If you can find organic, that'd be great. You know, you want them to be, if they're from your garden like ours, even better. But, you know, you kind of want to make sure there's no pesticides and impurities on that skin because, you know, that's what you're getting all the flavor from. But basically, you're taking those skins, you peel the lemons. You don't want to get too much pith. You're trying to get just the skin. And then you, 10 or 12 of those, depending on kind of the size of your lemons, and you macerate them in the alcohol for a liter of alcohol a good couple weeks. Again, some recipes say 10 days, and yes, if you're in a hurry, you can do it. It's not going to hurt you to leave it longer. Nothing's going to happen, and you're not going to get stronger. It just kind of just, for us, it kind of ensures that you get a nice, strong lemon flavor from it. After those few weeks, you're going to bring that up, and you're going to drain the lemon peels out, so you're left with basically this lemon-infused alcohol. And you're going to set that aside, and you're going to make your simple syrup. And the simple syrup we make, we don't do, normally simple syrup is one part sugar to one part water. So basically a liter of water to a kilo of sugar. We think that's way too sweet. So we actually do around 500 grams of sugar to a liter of water. So half the sugar to the amount of water. You bring that up to a simmer, basically until your sugar's dissolved. It looks like it's really, you know, totally dissolved, and then you take it off the heat and let that cool to room temperature. It's important that it's at room temperature, otherwise you're going to have a little bit of evaporation with the alcohol being added to that. But after you have your simple syrup, you basically add one part simple syrup to one part alcohol lemon mixture, and that creates your limoncello. I would recommend you don't just add all the sugar water right away. Save a little bit behind and then taste it and see if you feel like you still want to add more and kind of develop the taste you want. And it's best served cold. Always put it in an ice box. But so when you taste it, it's going to be stronger than it will be when it's cold. So taste it, but understand when you're tasting it, it's going to be a little hot alcohol flavor and they're going to lose a little bit of that when you put it in the freezer when you're getting ready. But after it's ready, you need to put it in a bottle, in an airtight bottle, because if it's not airtight, the alcohol will evaporate on you and you'll be left with disgusting lemon sugar water. But that's basically the steps to making your own limoncello. And it's so much better than any of that store-bought stuff you have. The store-bought stuff you've seen in the stores, or you probably had the rest of Italy, has never seen a lemon in its life. It's all chemicals and disgusting stuff. So if you can make your own, you're going to be amazed at the difference. And then really simply, the limoncini that Angela was enjoying during the interview is very, very simple. It's just one part limoncello to one part lemon juice to one part vodka. So I use a little shot glass and just kind of do it real quickly into a martini shaker. Put it over ice into a martini shaker. Shake that puppy up till it's nice and cold and put it into a martini, and you've got yourself a limoncini, and it is nice, refreshing, and really, really good. So make yourself one tonight and enjoy it. Relax, and, you know, savor life. That's what the Italians do best. Again, I wanted to thank everybody again for the ratings and reviews. You can, in the show notes this time, very important, are tons and tons of pictures from our trip. I think that helps bring the story to life. So please visit the website. Living Villa Capelli is where the podcast actually lives. But if you just go to villacapelli.com, there's a link to the podcast up there. You can click on that. You can also join us, don't forget, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. It's all under Villa Capelli. Please, we do ask you just help spread the word. We were having a lot of fun doing this, and we hope you guys are enjoying listening to it. So, you know, if you can spread the word to your friends and family that you know would enjoy it. You know, we love to get a community here and celebrate all those things Italian that makes life special and worth living. So until next time, thank you so much, and arrivederci.